Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org.
I made a mistake using a private email.
That's for sure.
And if I had to do it over again, I would obviously do it differently. But I'm not going to make any excuses. It was a mistake, and I take responsibility for that.
That was more than a mistake. That was done purposely. Okay, that was not a mistake. That was done purposely. When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the Fifth, so they're not prosecuted. When you have the man that set up the illegal server taking the Fifth, I think it's disgraceful.
Presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump speaking during last night's presidential debate, the first with, I guess, depending on how you look at it, either very high or very low expectations for both candidates. It's a strange presidential race this time, stranger than anyone could have imagined. You cannot make this stuff up. And yet, there it is for us day after day. This is just the first of the debates. How did both of the candidates do? Did they get to what the voters really care about? Did they change anyone's mind? And did we learn anything about either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump in last night's presidential debate? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to kick off today's broadcast with discussion of the first presidential debate, a little bit of a review of it. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard, Molly Hemingway of the Federalist will be our guest a little bit later. We're going to answer the question, how the Reformation embraced art, how the Church of the Reformation took art under its wing and used it for the purposes of teaching God's Word. Pastor Ted Giese will join us for that conversation. Our series Worldview Watch continues. We're going to talk about a Christian response to racism with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. Then Father Frank Pavone joins us from Priest to Life. We're going to talk about the extinction of pro-life Democrats. They're out there, but they're increasingly few, and especially at the national level, very, very rare indeed. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, at issuesetc. The Issues Etc. comment line is always open for our on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about last night's first presidential debate, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, our UPS guy came in today. He comes in almost every day. And, of course, the topic of conversation was last night's presidential debate, the first one there, between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. The fellow, this was his take. He said that he voted for both Republicans and Democrats in his life. And after watching last night's debate, he concluded, let's give Obama one more year, let the parties get their acts together, and come back with better candidates. What do you make of it?
I don't think your UPS man is alone. I mean, since we've been keeping track of this stuff in the modern era, there have never been, and I don't even think it's close, two less unpopular presidential candidates. I mean, I don't think there was a single candidate in the election that was as unpopular as both of them are in the same election running against each other. I mean, much of that debate last night was just a disaster. I mean, there were certainly portions of the debate where you would say Donald Trump did better than Hillary Clinton here, and certainly portions of the debate would say Hillary really got her licks in against Trump there. But much of the debate was just awful. It was a lot of really aggressive back and forth. Neither candidate, especially Trump, is particularly articulate about the issues. And to the extent that Hillary Clinton, you know, did present herself as a more traditional politician, a lot of what she did was sort of prepackaged and very sort of canned, and I think it fell flat with voters at a time when they feel a lot of anxiety about the direction of the country. So, I mean, I don't know what to tell your UPS guy other than, you know, not to give up hope, but hopefully we'll muddle through this, but a lot of people didn't feel good about that debate.
Molly, what did you make of our UPS guy's suggestion?
Well, I love the suggestion, and I'm wondering if he's available to serve, if he's eligible over the age of 35, and if he has decent ideas about how to run the country, I might consider voting for him. But I think it's also true that we have these two candidates because our country willfully chose them. And in the case of Donald Trump, yes, it was a very weird year with a crowded primary so that he was able to get the nomination by only getting, you know, a plurality of votes and, you know, whatnot. But in Hillary Clinton's case, the Democratic Party kind of walked into that with their eyes open. Yes, there were a lot of games being played to hurt Bernie Sanders and his supporters, but she won overwhelmingly. These are the candidates that Americans chose. And I think that if people feel bad about that as a self-governed country, they should look inward and think about whether there's something wrong with the way that we are handling ourselves and what we're teaching our children and the values that we are promoting with and among each other. So this is really happening, and it's the result of decades of decisions made voluntarily by all sorts of Americans about what they value and what they where they want to see things going. I mean, even just people say that they hate these candidates. This is the most watched debate in the history of presidential debates. This was a spectacle. And in many ways, we have been training for this type of entertainment replacement of actual things that matter for decades. We have been watching reality television for decades, and we kind of like these spectacles. So that's on us. That's not on Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton.
Mark, there was a point in last night's debate where candidate Clinton kind of addressed the television audience, pleading for some fact-checking to take place. She seemed, or at least acted, overwhelmed by Donald Trump's inaccuracies or something along those lines. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, there was a curious thing that happened after they had, it wasn't a debate, but they had this Matt Lauer, town hall with Matt Lauer on national security issues on September 4th. And Trump did pretty well in that town hall forum, and Hillary Clinton did terribly in that town hall forum. And part of the problem why Hillary Clinton did so terribly was she was asked a handful of very specific questions about her email scandal, which she proceeded to handle very badly and not tell the truth about. And the media just completely lost their minds because they saw that, you know, it wasn't a given that going into a debate that Hillary Clinton would win, that, you know, Trump could very potentially come off looking well. So what happened over the course of the last month was pretty remarkable. I mean, you saw this again and again on social media. There were a number of stories written. Paul Krugman wrote an entire column about it in the New York Times, where they basically were saying that it was incumbent upon the media, because Donald Trump is this unique threat, that they needed to very aggressively fact-check him in real time at the debates. And so Hillary Clinton and her campaign also echoed the same theme, and they really wanted Lester Holt, the moderator, to go out and do that. He didn't quite do that. He did confront Donald Trump specifically on the issue of whether or not he told the truth about the fact he'd opposed the war in Iraq the entire time. So Hillary Clinton was, like, desperate to get out there and make sure that people were aggressively fact-checking Trump. But the problem with this is that there were a number of specific incidents where Donald Trump actually called out Hillary Clinton for not telling the truth. He absolutely nailed her on the fact that she flip-flopped on her position in the Trans-Pacific Partnership the moment that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders made opposing these kinds of free trade deals unfashionable, and she completely dissembled on that issue. And then later on in the debate, she insisted that Donald Trump was wrong and that murders have been going down under the current mayor of New York, who's the first Democratic mayor of New York in nearly 20 years. And Donald Trump said, nope, you're wrong, Hillary, look it up. And the truth is murders are projected to go up for the third year in a row this year. So Donald Trump was absolutely right, and Hillary Clinton was absolutely wrong. And the media fact-checkers actually botched some of these issues, particularly the murder one that I saw. So, you know, this idea that Trump is, you know, unique in not telling the truth, and believe me, Trump has his significant issues telling the truth, is not unique. I mean, Hillary Clinton clearly doesn't have an entirely good command of the facts, and the media aren't well-equipped or even often competent enough to fact-check debates in real time. They need to, you know, think about this and exercise some sort of discernment before they run around calling one candidate a liar and saying the other candidate's telling the truth.
Molly, fact-checking used to be something that was done at a more leisurely pace. After the thing was over, you tune into NPR, and then you could hear, you know, their various correspondents fact-checking parts of the debate. These two candidates can keep a fact-checker busy for the rest of their lives in some sense, can't they?
They could keep an honest fact-checker busy for the rest of their lives, but there are two problems with the way the fact-checkers operate currently. One, they agree with Hillary Clinton so much politically that they're unable to see when she is saying something that's not true. Mark mentioned that she was completely wrong about whether she had flip-flopped on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, having once called it the gold standard and then claiming she was against it. But they don't see that as a big deal. Lester Holt didn't ask that question. Donald Trump had to bring up that issue because Lester Holt doesn't see it as a big problem. So one of the problems is they don't see Hillary Clinton's problems. The other problem is that they're way too eager to see Donald Trump's problems. I just read an absolutely idiotic piece about how Donald Trump said that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement had endorsed him. Now, that's a federal agency, so I think it's pretty obvious he meant the union had endorsed him, which is true. So there's this big fact check about how the government doesn't endorse candidates. I mean, yeah, no joke. The government doesn't endorse candidates. And yes, that was not the most precise, but to write this overheated, dramatic piece about how Donald Trump can't say anything true, it's just this pretending that you don't understand what he means when it's actually quite obvious. There's this political consultant, Brad Dayspring, who had the line that the media take Trump literally, but not seriously, and the people take Trump seriously, but not literally. There is a complete communications breakdown in how the media interpret Donald Trump and, you know, how much credit they're willing to give him versus how much credit they're willing to give Hillary Clinton. And that is not matched by how the people respond to these candidates. In fact, both candidates are viewed as very untrustworthy and dishonest. And a few weeks ago, the media decided to go on this absolute campaign of calling Donald Trump a liar. And Byron York at the Washington Examiner noticed that since they began that campaign to just openly advocate against Donald Trump and on behalf of Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump had gained like a 7-point advantage in who was more trustworthy. And so he was doing fine on the, or he's doing better on the metric of who is more trustworthy. So fact checking when you are the institution that is even less trusted than Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, polls show that people loathe the media and do not trust them. It just doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work because they do a really bad job of it.
Right, and a huge part of the problem, though, isn't just that the media are botching the issues. It's that it has a lot to do with selection bias, which is to say that, you know, you see this all the time in the professional fact-checking industry where they say that, you know, oh, Donald Trump has been found to have, you know, tell a pants on fire lie, or, you know, lie 50 times compared to Hillary Clinton's, you know, 12 or something like that. But the reality is, as much of what media bias occurs, not in that they necessarily botch the story and misrepresent the facts in the story, it's in what they choose to cover. And there are huge amounts of selection bias. Yes, there are lots of statements uttered by Trump that could absolutely and probably should be called out as untruths. However, when you're letting, you know, when you're fact-checking three of Trump's statements for every, you know, one, if that, of Hillary Clinton's untrue statements, that's a real problem. And that's a huge part of what's going on here. The media, you know, doesn't actually call out Democrats, and they specifically haven't called out Hillary Clinton. The moderator last night, Lester Holt, is a good example of that. He asked Trump about his birtherism. He asked Trump about his stance on his controversial claim that he was against the Iraq war the entire time. He asked Trump about, you know, insulting Hillary Clinton's looks. He asked Trump about his controversial, you know, racial statements. And all of this stuff, you know, he asked Trump all of this directly. He didn't ask Hillary Clinton directly a single question about her email scandal, any of the foundation scandals that she's been involved in, any of the stuff with her involvement of Wall Street banks and all the money she's got from that, and any number of, like, scores of scandals that Clinton has been involved in going back 20 years. I'm not a single one. So, you know, you still see this stuff, and it's still frustrating. You know, all of those issues are fair game for Trump to be called out on. It's just that it has to happen in some sort of fair manner, and the media has leveraged their credibility here to, you know, weaponize themselves in service of Democrats. And I think with Trump, we're finally seeing diminishing returns on that.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. We're talking about the first presidential debate on this Tuesday afternoon, September the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist about last night's presidential debate. Molly, you have written about last night's debate this morning, and you actually quote James Pendle of the Boston Globe. The first 30 minutes of the first presidential debate is the most important time slot in the general election, say historians and politics professionals. Did that prove true last night?
Yeah, a few days ago he wrote this piece for the Boston Globe, and he said that political analysts say the reason why the first 30 minutes are important is because it sets the tone for how the debate season is going to go, and it's when most people are tuning in and when, you know, first impressions are very strong impressions. Now, Donald Trump, I am sure, hopes that is the case, because by far his strongest portion was the opening of the debate. And he didn't do so well after that opening. But in that opening, he really had Hillary Clinton on the ropes. And she kind of came out nervous. She had a very weird, false smile that she was working on, that as the debate wore on, it became more natural. But it looked really weird at first, and she seemed nervous. She gave this very platitudinous answer about why she would be better on the economy. I mean, she was, you know, naming boring words, you know, energy policy, infrastructure, but she wasn't explaining what she would do, except that she did say she thought she should force companies to profit share. By contrast, when Donald Trump got the question, he went right back to his, you know, big talking points, which are they're taking your jobs and we need to keep jobs from going overseas. He talked about, or to other countries, and how to incentivize companies to stay here through lower taxes and regulation, and how to punish companies that send people overseas. This is a very popular message with his base, and he just seemed comfortable and prepared, and so that first third of the debate, the first 30 minutes, he did very well. The rest, they both were more uneven.
It was uncomfortable for me to watch. I don't know. And as the debate went on, it got more and more uncomfortable, partly because I think people are naturally averse to two people arguing, especially when the country's future might be at stake. But partly because of those nonverbals that you were talking about, Molly. I wonder, Mark, how did it come across to you? You had to watch it. You had no choice. Were you increasing? I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't like him. I don't like her. Both of them seem disingenuous, and they're both in their own ways. That was my takeaway from that. What about you, Mark?
I felt that way, certainly, and I felt that I think a lot of people felt that way, too. Early on, Trump started out strong, and then at some point, Hillary Clinton, not long after the first 20, 30 minutes, sort of baited Trump into talking more about his taxes and criticizing his business record, and Trump couldn't, you know, resist, you know, being defensive. And she got, you know, in some sort of effective attacks on him. And then about the last 40, 45 minutes of the debate, it was just, I mean, this horrible, you know, crosstalk. Nobody was particularly articulate. There weren't a lot of, you know, points being, you know, scored, and it just was really, really off-putting. You know, Hillary Clinton was just kind of standing there smirking, and Donald Trump looked annoyed and was interrupting constantly. And I am sure lots of people watched the whole thing and just saw it as a sort of disgusting spectacle rather than, you know, two smart people trying to, you know, hash out the best course for the country.
I think there might be something worth noting here, which has not received a lot of attention, which is there were hardly any conservative ideas being discussed at this debate. And when you consider how much of the country identifies as conservative, I think it was weird to experience that where, you know, you got a little bit from each candidate. Hillary Clinton talked about the need to honor treaties. Both she and Donald Trump emphasized the need for law and order. He talked about cutting taxes and regulation. Depending on what type of conservative you are on foreign policy, you might have liked what one or the other had to say. If you're for a very restrained foreign policy or a foreign policy that is more focused on benefits to the United States, I think maybe you liked what Donald Trump had to say. If you are a fan of continuing things as they have been in our foreign policy posture, you might have liked what Hillary Clinton said. But considering that this was an hour and a half and how inarticulate both candidates were when they were even fainting toward conservatism, it was a very disorienting experience. If you are someone who believes in small government, if you believe in the problems of the decline of the family, the problems caused by the decline of the family, or any of those, you know, any of those issues that might motivate you as a conservative, there really was nothing given to help to appeal to that type of voter. And I think that might have played a role in why people were so dissatisfied with last night's debate.
Mark, we talked about this last week before the debate, debating basically that Donald Trump is easily baited into giving answers and becoming defensive. Was Hillary Clinton successful at that last night?
Yeah, she was absolutely successful, and I don't know why this is, I mean, other than it's some sort of, like, personal defect. I mean, the moment you bring up any claims about his money or his business, and he just cannot stop, you know, defending his, you know, spotty business record. I mean, look, the reality is that Donald Trump is clearly very successful on some level, but he's also filed a number of bankruptcies along the way. There have been a number of, you know, controversial lawsuits. There have been a number of accusations of him stiffing workers, you know, and Trump, there are ways for him to sort of play this off. You know, he could explain a lot about, well, you know, lawsuits, the cost of doing business anymore. I mean, he could say any number of things. He just doesn't know when to cut his losses. And, you know, he has to insist that somehow his business record is completely spotless and that people just don't understand what's going on. And the reality is that seems utterly delusional. You know, there are plenty of wealthy businessmen that get through life without nearly as many lawsuits and or you know, accusations of impropriety as Donald Trump. But the thing is I think people understand who Donald Trump is. He doesn't need to be this defensive. He just needs to learn to, like, when to cut his losses and just say, look, I've been successful and, you know, I'm gonna, you know, fight for the American people the way that I have fought to, you know, build a business and, you know, just leave it at that. But he has to fight over every particular detail and it's really unbecoming.
I have two thoughts on this. One is that, and they're somewhat contradictory, but one is that if you think back to the primary, one of the big arguments for Donald Trump was that he and he alone could really effectively take on Hillary Clinton. And I think that this is how he won over a lot of reluctant Republicans who had preferred more traditional Republican candidates. They thought, well, at the very least, he will pummel Hillary Clinton like we would like to see her pummeled. And that's why last night was such a missed opportunity for him. He was given opportunity after opportunity. Yes, there was a hostile moderator, or not a hostile, you know, typical media type moderating who didn't ask any tough questions. But there were still openings where he could have gone after her. Most notably, when she's asked about cybersecurity, she talks about how important cybersecurity is, and he responds by talking about his finances. I mean, it was just it was a weird mistake, and it almost seemed like he was under the weather or just somehow unable to really be on his game. At the same time, I'm not sure I agree with all the conventional wisdom that this was a triumph for Hillary and that it was a disaster for Donald Trump. I think that if you actually think what their big takeaway messages were, to me it sounded like Hillary Clinton was saying she is the status quo candidate, and also that she will be mean to Donald Trump, which I'm not sure if that's what people are really looking for. And Donald Trump was able to still articulate that he thinks Hillary Clinton is not the right person because she has been in power for decades and she has not fixed any of these problems. He has fresh ideas about America being strong and he is acceptable. And I'm not saying I think he did a particularly good job with that, but I think at the end of the day, the underlying dynamic favors him to some extent. So even if you see some people return to Hillary Clinton or some, you know, bolstering in the polls, I don't think this debate really changed much in the underlying fundamentals of the race.
Molly, you quote Drew McCoy before declaring one the winner and the other the loser, consider their goals, their specific audiences, etc. Did they accomplish them? What's the point that McCoy's making there?
Right. Well, a lot of people want to talk about who won or lost a debate, but they think of it in terms of the aggregate, or they think in terms of who won the media contest. Well, the media were always going to say Hillary Clinton won no matter what. In this case, I think she actually did, if you believe that that first half hour doesn't matter as much as some people say it matters. So does it matter that she won the media and the pundits and the talking heads on the TV who all seem to have the exact same view? But if you think about the swing states where she's starting to have some battles, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and you think, what did a blue-collar person really take away from that debate? Might it have been that Donald Trump hates NAFTA and Hillary Clinton loved it? So does that help her? Or does that help him? Conversely, if Donald Trump is doing really well with whites without college degrees, but not so well with those with college degrees, what did they get out of the debate? Did he really seem convincing, as presidential, as competent? I don't know. I mean, I think those are the more interesting questions, but you have to drill down into the actual groups that might be swayed and not the people who already are so over the top on one side or the other, like so many people in the media.
Mark, did we learn anything about either of these candidates who want to occupy the White House?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I don't think we really did, although the question is how much people, ordinary people, have been paying attention to the race up until this point. I mean, I think that if you were watching the primary debates, you were not surprised by either Trump's demeanor or the positions that he staked out, or the fact that the positions he staked out weren't particularly conservative or traditionally even Republican a lot of the time. And at the same time, you know, Hillary Clinton's, her entire policy platform that she articulated last night was entirely predictable and, frankly, kind of, you know, anodyne and uninteresting if you've been following Democratic politics. There really were no big surprises. But, you know, again, you have to be reminded, you know, you're not in this social media bubble. You know, you are, you know, and in my case, I'm a reporter who lives in the Beltway. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is that most Americans don't have, you know, the time or the wherewithal, frankly, to follow politics around the clock. So it'll be very interesting to see how people react to this. At this point in time, I think people don't like both candidates, and they're kind of entrenched in their views about the candidates for one way or the other. This is the first time we've seen people really, for millions of people, I bet, really got up close and personal with these people for a long period of time, and it'll be very interesting to see whether they have any reaction one or the other, but it's too early to tell.
But, Molly, of course, even though Mark's right, it is too early in the debate season to tell. It's getting pretty close to the actual election. What do the American people need to know about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump before they finally make up their minds and walk into that polling place?
I think that so much of what we talk about in the media is irrelevant to how people are actually going to make their decision. It's totally my bias on full display, but I think this is a year where people are dissatisfied with the current way of handling things in the country. They have lost confidence in the elites who control the levers of power. And so it wouldn't really matter if you had big policy discussions or more details. Not that I don't think there's a big hunger for hearing more policy details from either candidate. But I think you're just going to see a continual scrappy battle back and forth between two, frankly, very scrappy candidates. I mean, Hillary Clinton doesn't get credit for this, but she is scrappy, and she showed it last night. She was in a very serious situation. She was caught on video saying something like, "Why am I not 50 points ahead?" And she was very angry about it when talking to the, I think it was the AFL-CIO. And everybody does agree, by all accounts, she should be winning this in a landslide. It shouldn't be close in any state. And yet here we are. We have polls tied. We have battleground states in contention. And she really needed to do at least as well as she did last night. And she satisfied that to just stay in the race and keep it from pulling away. But I think you'll just continue to see the polls go back and forth. The country needs to come to terms with the seriousness of either option or both options. And they also should, you know, one thing I really wish people would do is think a little bit more about whether there are other options beyond these two candidates. The media really focus a discussion on the Republican and Democratic options. There are other options available, and we should be learning more about some of those options. Not, you know, just I think people talk about Jill Stein, who's a far left candidate, but there's Gary Johnson, who's polling so significantly well in certain states that he's actually affecting the race. I mean, in Colorado, he's doing well enough that Hillary Clinton is in danger of losing that state, a state that I think a lot of people thought she should win easily. And so it would be nice to have a little more discussion of these candidates, what they offer, how it might, you know, and it would be nice, frankly, if they were on the debate stage, too. I think that would have actually helped things last night. But time is running out for that.
Mark, that's my final question for you. Will last night's debate help or hurt any third-party candidates?
Yeah, that's a good one. I can't really say. You know, there is Democrats have been waging a specific campaign now for a while because they were obviously concerned about the third party's bleeding votes that would have otherwise gone to Democrats. And the question is whether or not Trump performed so badly that a lot of people who'd be inclined to lean Democrat but are not voting for Clinton because of her personal problems judge Donald Trump to be so bad and so threatening, for lack of a better word, last night, that they feel that they have to vote for Clinton to prevent a worse alternative. I don't know. It's just so hard to say at this point in time. We've got more debates coming up, and we'll just have to wait and see.
You can read Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns about the presidential debate on Monday at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thanks.
Great to be here with you.
On the issue of Christianity and culture, the 2017 LCMS Life Conference will be January the 27th through the 29th in Arlington, Virginia. It includes participating in the 44th annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. You can find out more about this at lcms.org/life, lcms.org/life. When we come back, why did the Reformation embrace church art when, well, other streams of the Reformation were outright rejecting it? Statues had to go, stained glass had to go, the churches were whitewashed and cleaned out of all artistic references. Why did the Lutherans embrace it? We'll answer that question with Pastor Ted Giese right after this.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century.
Lord, hear us, and the
the 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300.
The congregation at Lake George Lutheran Chapel is a proud supporter of Issues Etc. We are located on the western shore of Lake George. With the lake in view, Jesus still teaches from the boat of his church, and the people sit, listen, and are fed by Christ himself through his holy ministry and instituted means of grace. Every Sunday, 9 a.m., set your course to 1540 West 800 North, Fremont, Indiana. Like us on Facebook at Lake George Lutheran and find out more at lakegeorgelutheran.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries, right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.